Hello again, everybody. This is Phil Lairness, though you probably know me best as the co-host of your Chillpack Hollywood Hour. And speaking of your Chillpack Hollywood Hour, next week is our 5th anniversary show. That's right, Chillpack Hollywood Hour number 260. Changing the way you've listened to the internet since May of 2007. This week, Dean Haglund is on his way to Texas, and I'm on my way to the United Kingdom. So how are we able to bring you another brand new installment of your Chillpack Hollywood Hour? Why, through the magic of podcasting, of course.
And now, your Chillpack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Lairness.
Is that right?
Sure did, yeah.
Hi, everyone. We're here with John K. Steele and Natalie Haverstock, otherwise known as Miss Balooniverse.
Hello.
Hello.
And, of course, Phil is here, too.
Right. We probably already established
that. Yeah, we
that
probably did.
Because, again, this show is pre-recorded.
Which we don't tell anybody.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
We'll cut that out.
Excellent. How are you guys? Welcome to our show.
Thank you. It's
informal. Now, tell us what you're doing here in Los Angeles.
Why don't we introduce them a little bit to Los Angeles?
Right, Los Angeles.
I mean, introduce John and Natalie to Los Angeles
because they
are strangers to these shores.
Of course. I gave a tour actually to John.
Right, already. You probably let them know all about the specific downtown history, but they may not be aware that the United States at one time were colonies of Great Britain.
I thought they still were.
No.
Well, California was never a colony, actually. California belonged to Mexico.
During that war.
And then annexed, I guess, early 1900s?
Late 1848, the American-Mexican War.
Right, and then in early 1900s, Los Angeles became the capital of the United States.
Did it?
Right?
Yes, right when Edison said, get out.
All I know is that the whole world does revolve around us. That's all I know.
That's right.
And that's because I am from here, and so...
Of course. That's it.
That's pretty much my history.
Are you from California?
He is.
Are you from Los Angeles?
I'm an international citizen of the world.
You see your iPhone and your laptop?
Mm.
He was born in the very town where this was all created, all of Apple.
What?
Cupertino, California.
Cupertino, yeah. The default setting for your weather app, that's where I was from.
I mean, I've been in Los Angeles now for about 3 or 4 days, and I haven't met anyone from here.
No. Yeah, that's right, because this is very migratory town.
Migratory?
Migratory. Mm-hmm. People migrate in and they migrate out. It's about isn't it like 1.2 million a month come in and 1.2 million a month go out?
Wow.
Every month they're leaving and coming at the same rate, more or less.
And if you do meet anyone from here, my only advice to you is definitely give up your wallet without a fight.
That's right. They're the ones that
children of celebrities like Suri Cruz.
Yes.
She'd be a native Los Angeles.
Right. And and she's going to mug you. There's no
she's gonna kill you
question.
Avoid her. That's right.
Suri Cruz.
Wearing high heels, you're in trouble.
Suri.
I think in 5 years of doing this show, that's the first Suri Cruz name check we've ever had on the
but not the last.
Now you'll be doing Suri Cruz's birthday party, won't you, while you're in town? Miss Balooniverse?
I am making some balloons while I'm here, but only for friends, for fun.
Ah, very good. Miss Balooniverse, for those who don't know, is the world, now world-renowned? You are world-renowned.
International
Miss Balooniverse. She is the world-renowned balloon artist.
And in space as well, the universe.
Right.
The balloon-universe.
The balloon-universe.
Like your balloons, is ever expanding.
Right. But I tell people she's a balloon artist, and they go, oh, so she makes a really good dog? Like, that's all they think when they think balloon animals, is that's all they do. Like,
it's the first thing everyone learns.
Is that right?
What you're going to learn today.
Is it really?
Yeah.
We are going to learn. Yay.
I've got all my balloons around me, ready to teach you.
This is not surprising, though, the dog reference. I mean, when people learn that you're a painter, the first question people always ask me is, oh, so he paints dogs playing poker?
That's right. Which was my Christmas card 2 years ago.
Exactly. So indeed you do.
I do indeed paint dogs playing. But I think they're playing Monopoly, but it's true. That's right. And John K. Steele, of course, a voiceover extraordinaire for our fans who live in London. You may remember as the voice of ITV for how many years?
Eight.
8 years. Mm. And you would say stuff like...
Coming up next on ITV is something interesting. So watch it.
That was so easy. Yeah. And then people would watch it. That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
And you auditioned to get that gig, right?
No.
They just handed that to you? Mm. That's a sweet gig.
Yeah.
Did you know the guys at ITV or what?
No, they basically look for somebody, and the agent, they phone up the agents. The agents send them tapes. They listen to the tapes and say, we'll take him.
That was it?
That's it. That's how it is in London. You don't audition for work in London. For what? Voiceovers, never. You just get a phone call and say, that's a gig, go there at that time, and you do it.
Wow.
Wow.
So, the only thing I've auditioned for was, I mean, I think there was an ad I auditioned for, but that went global. It was a big thing.
Right.
And I got it, which was great.
That is cool.
Deloitte.
Deloitte and Touche.
Yeah.
The firm of accountants.
Yeah, I've done voiceovers for America.
Yeah.
You record them in London.
Right.
You know, down the phone.
So how does one break into voiceover then in London?
Basically, you have to make up a tape. Well, I used to be a tape when I started, but, you know, a disc. You make up a tape.
Yeah. And then you have to buy them something to play that tape.
Yes, exactly.
That's right. Find a boombox.
You have to explain to them how it works. And then they'll listen to it. I mean, of course, they are inundated with people trying to break into that part of the business. I mean, we're all actors, and it's a side thing for actors. And they're inundated with stuff, and so they've got sacks of things to listen to. But if you can find a way to somehow get through that, and they listen to it, and they like you, and they think they can, you know, get you work and rest, but then they'll take you on.
Wow.
It's just like an actor trying to get an agent for acting.
Right.
Same thing.
Same deal.
Exactly the same.
They want to cover all the accents. They'll have a couple of each. If they've got a couple of Scots, then they probably wouldn't be interested in another.
And they want to hear Sean Connery impersonations.
Of course.
Oh, he just walked in.
Sean Connery just walked into the room, ladies and gentlemen.
I have worked with a post-production sound wizard, and one of his lasting claims to fame is that he created the preset to remove the whistling that goes through Sean Connery's dentures.
Wow.
To clean that up in
post-production
sound.
We didn't have that. How would we know it was him? Well, you could just add it to things, and then everyone could sound like Sean Connery.
I have always admired about Sean Connery, and this is not a show about Sean Connery, but I have always admired about him the rigorous work, the tireless work he puts in to creating an authentic dialect, no matter the character he's playing. Be it an American general in Presidio or a Greek king Agamemnon in Time Bandits.
Yeah, sure.
He really takes a lot of time.
Yes.
To the Russian submarine. You know, they're all so distinct.
I heard that Sean Connery and Michael Caine get together and jam their accents.
Really? They do each other's accents? Hello.
I'm so unhip that I think that means they're putting their accents into jars so that later they can be spread onto delicious toast.
I like accent jam.
Spread onto the tongue of an actor and make it sound like them.
Oh, wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah. You should be a director.
That
was fantastically specific direction.
Could you spread the accent on your tongue?
Is it too early in the show to talk about John's big upcoming voiceover gig?
Well, do we know about the 2020?
I haven't got that call yet.
Can you talk about the audition?
Yeah, I can talk about the audition.
Right. For those who don't know, John auditioned to be the voice of the
2012 Olympiad, London.
How awesome is that?
Yeah. I got a gig where I had to go and do the, am I allowed to say, like, products?
Yeah, sure.
The Visa Gymnastic International competition in London, and I did the all the voicing for that in the stadium, all the announcing who's coming on, what they're doing next, and who won that medal. I'll stand for the national anthem of Brazil or whatever, whoever won, that kind of thing. It was pretty big and scary, and like I'd never done live sporting event before, so it was pretty nerve-wracking. 7 hours.
Seven-hour audition.
7 hours.
And they paid you.
And at the start, this, the man who was...
That's a chill pack.
Who was doing it all, actually said to me, so, John, you've done live sport before. And I went, no. And his face sort of dropped by about 3 inches. He went, okay, don't worry, it'll be fine, it'll be fine. But at the end of it, he said it was all very good, so...
And would the job involve that much actual live work? Would... I would also think that a lot of it would also be pre-recorded, wouldn't it?
I mean, it's all live.
It's all live.
It's all live. Because you're not saying things like, you know, the restrooms on level 4 are closed. Could you all move to section 28 of the...
That's the gig I would actually want.
Yeah, exactly.
The white zone
it's actually about,
is for loading and unloading.
It's actually about the athletes or the gymnasts coming in, who's up next, what they're going to do, and reading out the score. You know, Dean Haglin, Canada, 14.73.
Right. Yeah.
Etc.
Yeah, right.
It has been a long time since you got a 14.73.
and a round of applause quite as big as that.
I know. Yeah, but no, that's typically my audience, not that big. That's sad.
The improv compulsories you still do very
that's
well
right.
at.
I do
but
well.
But
the main show.
And speaking of improv.
Yes.
Didn't you once and again in the future perform improv with Miss Balooniverse?
I did. Wasn't that you were there for that, weren't you, Phil?
I was.
This was at last year's London Sci-Fi Film
Festival.
We've
done it more than once.
Right. Yes,
we used to
I know.
Do it in the '90s.
Yeah,
quite a lot.
But before you were Miss Balooniverse,
how long ago was that?
Before you were Miss Balooniverse,
before I was Miss Balooniverse,
right? So he has still only performed once with Miss Balooniverse.
That's true.
Right.
On the same bill with Miss Balooniverse, only once.
On the night of the royal wedding.
Yes, the night of the royal wedding.
Yes.
That's right, during the honeymoon. we were up at
the night of honey love.
They had been together for
I don't know if the phrase you want is during the honeymoon. I think it's while they were on their honeymoon.
Oh, yeah,
it makes it sound like it was a royal command performance.
I thought they went to the gig, did they not? They just got married and went to the gig.
Right, yeah, they came.
Yeah.
And then we said we had to perform for the royal couple.
Yeah.
No, you're right. While they were on their honeymoon, Natalie and I did perform improv at the London Sci-Fi Film Festival.
Right.
What's the theater? The Apollo?
Yes,
right.
The Apollo, Piccadilly.
Right. Which is also often a weird... I'm always weirded about performing in a movie theater because the audio is weird. And you're so used to seeing a 25-foot person on a screen and then you see two little people down at the bottom.
But your performance was quite 2D.
Ow. Right in the neds.
I meant that as a compliment.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh, okay, fantastic.
It was flatter.
Oh, that was flattering. That's why it was flat, the 2D. I see
these what you did there.
Zingers right over the head. I can't get the show. Unbelievable.
We did act out Wills and Kate on their wedding night, didn't we?
Right. Yes.
One of our
kids. As the, you call it Boris, we call it crime endowments. Or where do they call it Boris these days?
No,
some country still calls it Boris. Mm. Anyway, crime endowments where you send somebody out of the room and then you get a couple suggestions and then they have to come back and confess to those very suggestions. And, of course, you knew nothing about the World of Warcraft, which I believe was our final... Because it was all geeks, of course, at the Sci-Fi Film Festival. And, of course, they would yell out, the World of Warcraft, which I had to get you to say, which you had no idea.
That, which helps.
Yeah. It was grueling, I thought, but it was funny. World of Warcraft, did you research it since that time? No.
I forgot to do that. Darn it.
Damn
By
God.
The time this show is heard, she
right.
will be expert at World of Warcraft.
I'll be making them out of balloons, left, right, and center.
Oh.
That is a great idea.
Quite frankly, Sci-Fi London this year. Yep.
They need my balloons.
Absolutely. Yeah. So back in the 90s.
Yes.
This is when you first became acquainted.
Yes. This was the, you know, who organized that? Was it Vancouver Theatre Sports?
Yes.
There's many theatre sports groups around the world. And often they have world improv tournaments. And so Vancouver sent out an invitation to everyone in the world, but we were on the crap list because we hadn't been paying our fee to Keith Johnston. So there was a whole division within the World Improv groups. So a very small amount of people came.
But it was to coincide with the Commonwealth Games, which were being held in Victoria.
That's right. I do remember that. But we didn't
had to go and perform there, and we couldn't get in, so we couldn't do our show.
What? I don't remember that. We were performing live. We did some
but
street.
But there was a performance we were supposed to do. British team were sent down there.
Didn't have the
right passes, and we couldn't get in. So we went to the bar.
I don't remember. But you and John and Katie were supposed to go perform for your national team.
Yeah, not this John, another.
No, another John. Completely different John.
Yes.
Yeah. This John was too busy being the voice of the Commonwealth.
He wasn't born yet.
He wasn't born yet. He's that young. That's right. No, you guys met after that, right? Or it was just shortly after that.
A few years after that.
Yes. Yeah. And you've been married how long?
11 years.
You had to look at each other.
Yeah. 11. Still
now 11. We'll see what John guessed Natalie would say.
Hilarious.
John guessed Natalie would say 11 years.
Yay. Yay. So tell us now about how Miss Balooniverse works.
When did you first
become Miss Balooniverse?
Or even just say, this is something I want to learn how to do.
I was headhunted by a balloon agency.
What?
Yeah, that's true. I was doing my Edinburgh previews.
Who wasn't?
Yes, I get a call.
They're scouting. You've probably been noticed and overlooked.
Did you have any previous experience with balloons before you were headed?
Okay. No, I used to draw and do things like that before I went to drama school. And then, you know, acting takes over, doesn't it? All your other hobbies that you do and the creative stuff, it all just gets channeled.
Right.
So I was doing my previews for the one-woman comedy play that I was going to be doing at the Edinburgh Festival in London, and a girl who'd just bought an agency for balloonists came to see the show. We got chatting in the bar. Being a theatre actress, I've always had to do crazy other jobs to make money. So she said, come and take a lesson, see if you like it, because I want more entertainers doing it.
As opposed to people who are good at balloons, but not very entertaining.
Yes, maybe not that engaging.
Right, because I've seen some of those. I mean, they're guys with, like, they sort of stick some white on their face, like clammy makeup, and then they just concentrate on squeezing balloons into shapes, and then just hand them to the kid, and don't talk to the kid. And, you know, it seems very sad and disconcerting, really.
They're few and far between now, I think.
Oh, is that right?
You get your clowns who do, you know, entertain and do a few balloons as part of other stuff they're doing, like juggling or whatever.
Or kidnapping children.
Nobody does that.
What?
Nobody does that. Come on. No, they don't do that. That's
Those are American clowns.
Not anymore.
Yes, exactly. That's frowned upon in the clown tradition.
That's just kind of frowned upon.
I could be kicked out of the union.
What I love about doing that again.
What I love about Natalie's story is, that you were pursuing acting and following, obviously, what was a passion, doing the show, and it's always great when we follow our passions and it leads to exactly where we were supposed to go, even if that ends up being something totally different than...
It's true, because you always wanted your own BBC series. Now
you got it.
It's in the works.
Yeah.
Did you not know that, Phil?
I did not know.
Oh, yes. Miss Balooniverse has signed a deal. No, that's ixnay. No one will hear that.
It's unofficial yet.
It's unofficial. A pilot in the works.
By the time this show is on,
I'm not allowed to talk about it.
Really?
Well, let me.
Not on the air. What? You didn't know that.
What kind of show? Let's say, hypothetically, someday Miss Balooniverse was able to have a television show. Yeah. You know what? I want to produce a television show with Miss Balooniverse.
Very good.
Well, I do cabaret. I do live.
What kind of show should I be planning? What kind of show would make Miss Balooniverse happy?
One with Sean Connery. She could make new dentures for us.
Well, up to now, I do get to do my cabaret show with balloons, which is kind of fun. See, I get volunteers from the audience, much as we used to with the improv. And I will make a costume, like I'll get a chick to help me build a scuba diving outfit for a guy.
Most of what we get on American television right now is political debates, Republican political debates.
Right.
I'm going to pitch this. Miss Balooniverse is the moderator. She's creating things during it.
During it for the balloon.
While talking, while getting the answer, the candidates have to help her in creating these things. They have to, you know, because that way we learn whether or not they actually know what they're talking about, because they can't just be reading it off notes or teleprompter. Mm. They have to be telling you and explaining these things to you, these political ideas to you, while they are involved and engaged in helping you create these balloon things. Wouldn't that be extraordinary?
That would be extraordinary, but I can't believe a live cabaret show you can make an entire scuba suit, because I always thought those large things takes like half an hour.
I'm going to make one for you now.
It's going to be large.
Yep.
Wow.
And you will be able to put it on and wear it.
The whole thing.
The whole thing.
So what you're hearing, everyone.
Time it then, see how long it takes.
Okay, we're technically right on the...
What you're hearing now is the exterminator has just come in and is spraying...
Spraying for roaches. That's right.
So this is quite a big one. This is your tank.
That's my tank. So you already know exactly, because you made one of these before, that you can then...
Oh,
look at... And the dogs, of course, are curious at such... Wow. This is fascinating to watch, though.
Because you know what would be even more fascinating?
What's that?
We should be quiet, and John should have to narrate this.
Okay.
Don't.
Live sporting event. Yes. Here you go. We'll be sending this to the Olympiad as part of your... Remember, the audience can't see it, so... Make it visually interesting for them. Mm. Paint a lovely picture.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's a fabulous, fabulous balloon. It's the first Miss Balooniverse's first attempt at the casing of the aqua. And oh, this is a great spectacle. And just moving forward, it's absolutely extraordinary. It's increasing all the time. She's tying a knot. Can she do it in one attempt? It's done. Marvelous. So the first attempt at the casing for the aqualung is done. She's now applying the strapping procedure. I think this was first used in 1924 Olympiad in the Greek performer. Of the balloon. In fact, balloons should be an Olympic event.
Balloons should be
an Olympic event.
There is
what?
Stage competitions. Yeah. We have a 3-minute competition where everyone has to make something in 3 minutes.
But if I was a small child right now, you would be telling me what you're making, or you would just be...
No, I like people to guess what it is.
Oh, I see. So the kids are going... Oh my God, it's a snake, it's a dragon, it's a thing.
Not just kids.
Like everybody?
Wasted on kids, I always say.
She is wasted on kids, it's true, actually.
Is that right?
Look at that.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, James Bond could wear one of them. Back into the Connery theme again.
Now, we will absolutely, obviously, post pictures of this.
Yes.
Which means I should take pictures.
Well,
of this while this is going on. Right. I should be taking pictures.
I'll hold it. Here. Right.
Yeah, why don't you?
There you go.
Oh, my goodness.
And you're on wireless, so you can walk around and go get your camera.
Welcome to our most technically proficient show ever. No, while she is working, the one piece that is missing for me in this is Miss Balooniverse has a very unique and world-renowned style. Her fashion sense.
Oh, right.
Of course,
is legendary.
Of course.
Right. Is it not?
But she knew this was the radio, so she didn't
bring
her outfits.
But I have wanted to ask her about the origin of Miss Balooniverse's look and perhaps the evolution of it.
Yes.
Did you, knowing you have a design background, did you design your look?
Well, no, I like the 1950s kind of vintage look, and I started getting my costumes from a designer in London called Pop Soda, and since they've got to know me so well, now they do design my dresses for me. So I've got the Olympics in London, so I've got fantastic fabric with the flags of all nations on.
Oh, yo.
And for the Queen's Jubilee, I do have my Union Jack dress, which I brought with me. I will be wearing it this trip. I already wore it at the balloon convention.
Oh, yes, your union. Oh, my God. You just wrapped a balloon around my fingers that was uninflated, and now you're inflating it as it goes around my fingers, and that curls it like a pig's tail. How clever is that?
Yeah, that's how pig's tails get made.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. I wrap it around my finger. That is awesome. So are these what you learn at these balloon conventions? Like how these techniques?
Oh, yeah, it's phenomenal.
Because she was just at a balloon convention in Phoenix.
Yeah, it's called Twist and Shout. And it's been going for about 11 years, and it's a fully international balloon convention. There were people from Japan, Australia, Spain, France.
And they all do what you do, more or less.
Yes. I mean, it's different. Some people are clowns.
Right.
Some people are serious artists.
And are these competitive events, or...?
We have loads of competitions. There's loads of trophies and prizes. There's a dress competition. We had a whole fashion show with costumes, wedding dresses made of balloons. Absolutely phenomenal. Google Twist and Shout Convention, and you'll see just the standard is unbelievable.
Wow. And do they test for steroids and other performance-enhancing drugs?
Test for plastic. It's got to be pure latex.
That's right. Well, now I'm really curious what that... So the one that twists around my fingers at the top of the tank. Oh, and I'm getting my head measured.
I love that soda pop. Soda pop?
Pop soda.
Pop soda.
Yeah.
Can advertise, you know, with the phrase, as seen on Miss Balloon-iverse.
That's awesome. Okay, are you getting another picture?
I've been taking pictures. In all of them, you look very angry, Dean.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm completely miffed at my freaking...
Okay, Dean, I just need you to...
Oh, what do I do?
Stand up for a sec. Uh-huh. Can you put your arms directly above your head?
Directly above?
Yes, that's right.
Now give me your money.
Keep them direct... Face me.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Keep them directly above.
Now, if that isn't James Bond, what is?
Oh, my God.
And how long did that take, Dean?
Technically, that was 6 minutes.
6 minutes.
6 minutes for a whole scuba outfit.
You can put your hands down now.
All right.
Look at that.
Isn't that fantastic?
Oh, you just dropped
six
your mic.
6 minutes.
6 minutes to do this. So you, no problem doing this on stage. Now there's a scuba thing, and you improvise with
then
the scuba diver.
She improvises
diver.
All the acting and improvising skills while doing that, and it's that's.
I've usually pre-made a giant shark that's hidden, and I bring that out, and he gets chased around the stage by the girl that's helped me make it.
Ah, that's awesome! How delightful! Now, and then do they get to take these home?
Of course.
And how long will this last for me? Like, does latex leak air after a while?
A week.
Well, that's pretty good. Then they have to come back to your show again. So it's planned obsolescence. You have that already pre-built into the show.
It's what I call job security.
Yeah. It is job security.
Fantastic.
Oh, look at this. Are these the bubbles coming out of my... Oh, how awesome is that? Thank you. I am honored to be a Miss Balloon-iverse scuba guy.
Have you got a photograph of that?
Yes. Did we get a photo?
Whee!
This is awesome. Hooray! So you were saying that you're not one for competing.
Yeah. No, but I did come home from the Florida convention in January with a trophy.
Oh, yes. What'd you win?
Miss Sociable. And I came second in the stage competition, but it was very informal.
Oh, yeah?
Very informal.
So they don't have a super formal one?
No, this one is called the Florida Super Jam that happens in January. And there's no... proper competing.
Right.
Just a bit of performing on stage and lots of classes. Twist and Shout is I think it's the biggest one in the world now. Big competitions and people can really make their name. They win the large sculpture competition. They'll be in magazines.
You're kidding.
They'll be famous in our world.
Wow.
Yes.
But it seems that your world is very supportive. It's not like stand-up where it's like, don't steal my jokes, or it's like...
Or magicians where everything's a secret.
Yeah.
No, we share. We have a jam room that's, a large room that's full of every kind of balloon you can imagine. It's open 24 hours a day. We're all in there building things, sharing new techniques, helping each other. We've got classes where we're learning.
How was the name Balloon-iverse still available? How had no one...
I know, right? It's such a great name, Miss Balloon-iverse. And it was just sitting there unused.
See, I would not have been surprised if that was how you got started, was you had just come up with that great name
and then thought, these skills.
Well, I better learn the skills to go with it because the name alone is surefire.
Like a superhero.
Yeah.
And it, doesn't anyone worry about, oh, I can't, if I show this technique, everyone will steal it and I will be out of a job or something?
No, because in the balloon world, we're always name-checking the person that taught us that original design.
Oh, really? So,
for instance, I'm just about to make a Phil here, because last time I saw you, I did make a Dean.
Yes, you made she does caricatures in balloons.
The one of you, right? You this is one. The one in London, of yes. him with the aliens, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Standing on an alien.
Right.
With
extraordinary.
The world in your hand.
Right.
But so, I'm now making a Phil, but the thing is, this technique is using a heart balloon to make the lower part of the jaw, where I've just twisted off a bubble on one of the lobes. This technique was invented by a man called Ken Stillman. And so
as you're doing your show, you're going, I'm going to do a Ken Stillman right now, and followed by a...
That's great.
The general public don't care, but we balloonists are nerds. We have our own particular brand of geekiness where it, you know, matters to us. So we appreciate Ken's amazing genius.
That is awesome. So now you're just going to look at Phil and then do a balloon caricature.
This is fantastic that you are just wearing this during the show.
I got to say, it's remarkably comfortable. I am shocked that wearing a balloon.
And it's waterproof.
And I would think that if I am underwater and I could actually pop one of these things and suck the air out and survive... 12 more seconds, maybe. Maybe something.
I like your way of thinking.
Burst it in your mouth.
I got to burst it in my mouth to jam the whole thing and pop it.
Yeah.
Ow! Go by here. Awesome.
I'm actually recording a video.
A video?
Dean Haglund, of you hosting Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
With bubbles.
In a balloon scuba.
Can you see? Somewhere there is...
Now, I'm curious. He's rated to dive at what depth?
No deeper than your average bath.
Which is fine, because you know what? Dean Haglund doesn't like to go deep.
Yes, I am shallow as shallow can be. Where's my air bubbles? Am I touching
them?
Oh, here they are. Yeah. Yes, that's what I was trying to... There.
They're lovely when they're that age, aren't they? The things they come out with.
I'm immature. It's true.
So, Miss Ballooniverse, when you do this, do you feel that it engages all of your different passions, from designing to acting and performing and improv?
Absolutely. It's like my whole life has been just a rehearsal for doing balloons. It's
wow.
Phenomenal. You were talking about political balloons earlier, and I did... a Christmas party at...
This was in Downing Street.
Yes.
I've seen photos. I wanted to ask you about this. Yes.
So I made a caricature of the Chancellor of the Exchequer. He's the guy that does all the budgets and is responsible for financial things. I made him out of balloons. He was such a charming man. He absolutely was thrilled with it. So we had our photograph taken together with his balloonicature. And, of course, it made the papers with many jokes about inflation and going bust.
The British press, they're hilarious. But those gags.
But he wrote me a lovely letter.
Did he really?
Yes, a thank you letter.
So not just a standard, like,
you. Yeah, from the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Absolutely, saying that it lived on his mantelpiece for quite some time.
Yeah, I'm not sure the Chancellor of the Exchequer has a standard... you know, thank you letter that he sends to fans.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, the way I do. Yes, you know, stamp.
He doesn't have the stamped headshots that he's sending out.
Love you always. Trust no one.
Trust no one, yeah. Deny everything. Love your Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Oh, my God.
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So, now, and please, go, Dean Haglund.
No, that event... Did you have to go, like, through tons of security and, like, it all... And you had to be vetted 2 weeks before and the whole nine yards?
I don't know if they vetted me. They had my name.
Yeah. And then how was the party itself?
Luckily, Ballooniverse has a clean slate. They got nothing on me. I've never been caught.
But now you've been on this show.
Yeah. She was actually followed by men in black suits for about 4 days.
Right.
And you did caricatures of them as well.
She's on the no-fly list.
Black scuba suit.
But surely the party must have been a bit odd. Was it like... Did they all let loose, or is it very official members of Parliament?
No, I did do the Cabinet Office Christmas party, which was, you know, for the government, and that was full of civil servants, basically. But this party in Downing Street was for the Starlight Foundation, which is like the Make-A-Wish Foundation. It's for children that have been suffering from...
So it was a charity party.
It was.
It wasn't a private...
house.
Right. Oh, okay. So it wasn't members getting just wasted on booze.
But I did do that party as well.
Oh, you did too?
Yeah.
Oh, no, like the Obama, the White House Halloween party, wasn't it, that we talked about on the show?
Yeah.
The one that was kept secret for quite a while.
Yeah.
Because, you know, during a recession, during an economic downturn, I'm sorry, it would be in poor taste to have in the White House an Alice in Wonderland-themed Halloween party where among the hired performers was, Johnny Depp, who was a hired performer at the White House Halloween party, private for the president's children and their friends. And Tim Burton was hired to design the White House.
All the interior decorations and all that.
So this was kept very secret for quite a while and only let slip during this election cycle, I guess, somehow.
We're often asked to sign confidentiality
Forms
beforehand.
Of the parties that you go to?
Yeah.
Wow.
But then again, you know, I've had a few parties cancel on me when the Greek banking crisis happened. I had two parties cancel, and I didn't get any cancellation fee because that's not the way it works when I work through agents, but they would have still had to pay for the whole venue hire, the caterer, because it was just a week's notice or something. But when people are cancelling parties, they're not thinking about those of us whose livelihoods actually depend on these parties. So
right.
And go on with the party, I say.
Even if you're cutting.
At the same time, though, you must understand that when an investment bubble bursts, it's just happened.
How ironic.
Yeah, you playing with balloons would be a little too soon.
It's just not a little too seemly.
It's not looking seemly.
Looking unseemly to That's be it. Having fun.
When we were in London for Sci-Fi London, we got to see a short film. Well, you did a cameo in this short film.
Oh, yes.
Via Skype.
Via Skype.
Which was actually pretty cool. The you know, how it was integrated
it
was actually
great,
pretty cool.
Actually. Yeah. I know. You didn't know.
It made you wish in retrospect that you hadn't phoned your performance in literally.
That's my whole career.
They were the gags.
The star of this short film, who was really quite good, quite well fitted to especially a period... piece, I thought.
Oh, yes. No. No, don't stop.
John K. Steele. Now, was this the first time you'd had a chance to, on screen, you know, get into the period gear and...
No, a lot of television work I've done has been period.
Right.
I've done... I mean, the very first thing I did when I left drama school was a TV series set in the 1950s. And...
What was that one?
It was called Strathblair.
I never heard this one.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah, it was set in Scotland in the 1950s, and it was all about just a kind of TV series, 10 episode television
like
series.
Like Coronation Street?
No, it wasn't a soap. It was just, it was about, God, I can't even remember what it was about. It was just about these people that lived in this community in Scotland, and it was just a kind of historical drama, basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like Downton Abbey. It was a historical drama, but this was set in rural Scotland.
Now, you just said Downton Abbey, which whenever Americans say that, we get corrected. And we're
Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey.
Yeah. I was Americanizing myself.
So it would be accurate if we called it Downtown.
No, I think it's Downton Abbey is the right way. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I'm in downtown LA at the moment.
Yeah, you're
just
in
slipped
downtown
into
LA.
It.
That
I've been was saying interesting,
the word,
wasn't it?
I've been saying the word downtown for the last couple of days, so now I'm saying Downton Abbey. But thank you for correcting me.
No, so it is Downton Abbey.
Yeah, Downton.
So you've already started dropping your U's from favor,
Harbor,
spelling all my words wrong.
Spell of Flavor. Flavor?
Yeah.
I want Flavor.
One of the things that I did, period drama, actually I worked with Natalie in it. I played the part of George Orwell in a dramatization of his life, which was nominated for a BAFTA.
Wow.
And Natalie, I got Natalie the part of...
I got Natalie the part.
Well, the director said, do you know any actresses that could play a part? I said, no.
Oh, wait, I know one.
I know a balloonist.
I know a balloonist.
And
She played Orwell's wife. So we were actually a man and wife. It was fantastic.
What was the name of this project?
It's called Against the Tide.
I want to see this. Nominated
for a BAFTA. I played George Orwell. It was filmed in Scotland, England, Spain, because he played a huge part in the Spanish Civil War. We went to the locations where he was. And it was an astonishing piece. It was a British-Spanish production.
Really? What year was that?
2004 or something? 2000.
And it's available on DVD?
Yes.
And were you an Orwell aficionado prior to
Paris? I'd read Down and Out in Paris and London, and I'd read... what was the other one I read?
Oh, God. 84, no. Time Machine...
Animal Farm?
No, the one about Spain.
One about Spain, all right.
Okay, homage to Catalonia. And... So, which was great. The homage to Catalonia was the one that was the most useful that I'd read.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And he was a correspondent during the war?
During the Second World War, he was a BBC, I wouldn't say he was a reporter, but he made broadcasts. And unbelievably, all the broadcasts that George Orwell had made during the Second World War are gone. The BBC deleted them because it needed space.
What?
Yeah, nothing. So there's no recordings of George Orwell's voice. And yet he was broadcasting all through the war.
Are you kidding?
No.
And wait a sec. What do you mean they needed space? They were...
Well, in those days, they were probably...
Right. Think of how much space this was taking up. I mean, again, we had the technology to record television, you know, even when it was film and, you know, or live and all of this. We had the ability.
Yeah.
We just never saved.
And the BBC, was back before the Second World War, the BBC building probably didn't have that much space in it or something.
Oh, yeah, I guess not.
I mean, how many recordings of Edward R. Murrow broadcasting back to America from the UK during the Blitz do you think we actually have?
Exactly.
But, you know, when we went to that bomb shelter in Berlin where the tour, they had recordings of, like, here comes the British to bomb Berlin, everybody get to the bomb shelter. They had that playing in a loop. Like, why would you say that as a recording and not George Orwell? That seems odd to me.
Mm.
And now, you know, how did that even survive? Mm. Anyway, how do we get on that?
And apparently he broadcast from a room called 101. You know how in 1984 the most hot is
the room of your biggest fears?
Room 101.
In room 101. So there you go. The BBC.
In the BBC.
So was he seeing action, or was he just getting reports?
Oh, no, no. He was in London broadcasting.
Right.
But he did go to Germany towards the end just to sort of be there and see, you know, when it was just the last days of the war, he went over him. So.
Wow. And when did he die? I don't even know.
He died in 1950, I think. 49 or 50.
Yeah. Just at the end of the war.
Mm.
Wow.
49 or 50, I think he died.
You were up for a BAFTA.
Not me. The production was up for a BAFTA.
Aha. Uh-huh. And who did it lose to?
Oh, God, that's a good question. I can't remember.
You don't want to deal strictly in the positive.
Yeah. I've obliterated it from my memory.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then...
that was a great piece,
do you have a particular type of role that you gravitate towards that you really enjoy playing?
Or? Well, I'm supposed to... when I go back, I'm doing a comedy pilot when I go back. I don't think I've got a specific thing that I go, oh, I seek that out, I must try and get that. I just, like most jobbing actors, I take what's thrown to me.
Whether it's
theatre or television or...
Well, he's the only actor I know who's played both Judas and Jesus.
Yes, true.
That's right.
Simultaneously.
The Judas piece was a theatre piece that won an award at the Edinburgh Festival.
So yes.
That's pretty good.
And you did that again...
I did it in London.
London as well.
Which is the better role?
Oh, definitely Judas.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Because you get to be more...
I really enjoyed doing the stage play, what I played. It was a one-man show, and it was all set after The Last Supper, and he's deciding after The Last Supper. It's set between The Last Supper and The Kiss, and he goes through all his rationale about what it's all about, and he's actually not a villain at all. He thinks if he does this... then, you know, there will be an uprising and, you know, all these people that were screaming Hosanna will be there and they'll be behind the king and the Romans would be overthrown and, you know, they'll be free. That's the whole rationale, but of course it doesn't turn out that way.
Wow. And then playing Jesus, you were just...
I mean, that's like a bit of a conspiracy as well. I talk about conspiracy theories about Judas. Was Judas a villain? It's written in the scriptures that Jesus says, one of you will betray me.
Right.
Is that a command? Is that a command? One of you will betray me.
Well, and he knows that it's important. I mean, for the path of redemption, for his heroic journey, the betrayal is necessary. And in fact, I mean, this is what I have always found so fascinating from a language standpoint. We get the word betray. The origins of it mean to serve.
Mm.
Right.
Betrayals do serve.
Right.
Serve a purpose.
And, so maybe he's talking to the waiter. One of you will serve me.
Well, and, and
this
indeed.
This bread and water.
This bread and water.
You think of the sacrifice then in that light of Judas, who, again, there's plenty written that he was the disciple that loved Jesus the most.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow. So if Jesus were to ask or command a disciple, it would have to be the one that loved him the most, because that would be the only one he could rely on to commit that betrayal. And of course, the whole idea of he's doing it for this bag of coins.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Is ridiculous.
Ridiculous. And yet that's the way he's been portrayed for 2,000 years.
And yet
this villain who clearly he wasn't, in my opinion.
And if you look at it, the idea of this conversation, you know, even if it went unspoken, but this conversation of, you know, Judas, you're the one that loves me the most, so here's what I need you to do. I need you to betray me in this way. And wait, it's far worse than you think.
Hmm.
You get to go down in history as the most reviled name throughout human history. Sound good? Mm. You game?
You game? Let's go.
And if he did betray him, why did he, if he thought, I don't like this guy and I want the money, I'm out of here, he wouldn't betray him with a kiss. He would just say, that's him there, right, give him the money, I'm off.
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't be like that. You know?
Right, why not just a finger point instead of the whole kiss thing?
It's very interesting. It's a great area too.
Right.
Did you read the agnostic book of Judas? The one that didn't get included in the
Bible? Agnostic, the Gnostic.
The Gnostic, did I say Gnostic?
One of the Gnostic Gospels.
Gnostic Gospels.
No. I don't think it had been published before
yeah, right,
by the time. And the first time I did that play back in 97.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. It won a Fringe first at the Edinburgh Festival, which was pretty good, really. Yeah.
And then did you do Judas first, and then you did?
I did that in Edinburgh, took it to London, and did it there. And just so happens, there was an American TV company over looking for someone to play Jesus in this film. But I was actually up for the part of John the Baptist. And at the audition, they sort of said, could you read this bit as well? And it was a part of Jesus, and lo and behold, I got it.
And then they nailed you to the cross?
Then they flew me out to Israel, 13 weeks filming.
And then they asked you, can you read for the part of Salome?
And I ended up at the end playing the Virgin Mary.
That's right. But from that, my favorite story.
Your one-man show is all set.
It's called The Bible, one-man show. Yeah.
From Room 101.
That's hilarious. Do the whole, all the characters.
Well,
hilarious.
Well, no, what, so is there any role? Is there any type of role? Is there anything that you...
Because Phil directs, you know, in any case.
Yeah, find yourself wanting to do that you haven't had a chance to do, or even something you have played where you would want to revisit it again.
This is a very good question. I'd like to play Jesus again.
Really?
Yeah,
because now you know more.
Yeah, I know more about it. And the version I was in, it was a kind of easy television Sunday school. You know, I'd like to do a version of it. The kind of stuff we're talking about. That'd be terrific if there's a film that ever made. It's never been done.
Right.
That'd
it
be really
done,
good.
Hasn't it? Mm. Well, I guess, I mean, Last Temptation of Christ.
Yeah. But that was only, again, a specific moment in the history.
Right, But he's hallucinating backwards, right, from the cross?
Yeah. I did see it when it came out. When I went to see it in Scotland, there was people with big banners outside the cinemas. You can't watch this movie.
You're kidding?
Yeah. Had to fight through people to get into the
cinema. We had this even in Century City. I had to exit through a picket sign of people condemning me and then praying for my salvation as I walked out of the theater.
Pray for me.
You know, and I've told this story on the show that, you know, my mother was one of these people who believed, you know, really that it was shameful that Martin Scorsese would do this, not because she is devout or even particularly a member of any religion, but she just thought, boy, this is really going to upset and hurt so many people. And it wasn't until she then saw Martin Scorsese, I think, on Nightline doing an interview. And, you know, this is a man who had studied for the priesthood. Mm. This had been his true passion.
Good Catholic boy.
And she heard this authentic and thoughtful spokesperson for his own work. And that's rare in this business where people actually can speak about why they do, what they do in a thoughtful and authentic way. And she could never bring herself to see that film because she thought it would hurt too much. But she was so turned around by that interview that she never missed anything else that Martin Scorsese
made.
Pretty
powerful, isn't it?
Yeah. Wow.
And so if you get the chance to talk about things in these ways, rather than, you know, it just hoping for the controversy and then marketing the controversy of it.
You know, they should do, you know, when Christopher Nolan was told, hey, what's your idea for the first Batman? He was supposed to do Batman Begins. He goes, yeah, I see Batman, we're going to follow him around, and, you know, it's Batman and Robin's, the relationship, and we focus on that. Go, okay, great, what's the budget? Well, around 60. Oh, yeah, okay, well, 60 million. Goes, no, 60,000. I'm just going to take a handheld camera and follow, you know, Batman around, like, the reality series. Yeah. I'm like, what? No, we get a big budget. Here's $150 million. Go make a big movie, you idiot. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. I thought, oh, you know, I would actually like to see that. Yeah. But in the same book, wouldn't it be cool if there was, like, just a reality series of just following Jesus around with, like, a hand cam?
Yeah.
Like, in the whole thing, like, and you follow all the things?
Yeah.
It would just be like, so the, like, you know, gothic, heavy retelling. Yeah, it's just like, I'm going to go over to the Last Supper here and, you know, hang out. Be funny.
Right.
I mean, I don't think MD could do, if you're going to do the traditional Sunday school story, I don't think MD could do it quite as well as Zeffirelli's with Robert Powell. I mean, in that style of depicting the gospel sort of thing, it was pretty good. And Robert Powell was fantastic, actually. If that is your image, if your image of Jesus is like a Renaissance guy with a, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Well, now we come to the end, and here's Miss Balooniverse has arrived with a sculpture piece that she's now using her Sharpie on to do the final bit.
I guess my goatee. I don't know what the Sharpie is being used.
Well, I imagine that's your headset. Oh, look at that.
Hey.
What, that's your bald head, and you're wearing headphones.
And glasses.
And glasses, too.
Although it kind of looks a little bit like a superhero mask.
Yeah, it does. You do look like Batman. Yeah, your glasses do give off that.
Because I am kind of super. I'm the co-host. That's my alter ego.
He knows the co-host.
This way a bit. Thank you.
Oh, look at that. That is hilarious.
You need to do a little bit on the head as well, I think.
Yeah. No, I think the head's accurate, actually.
You like it that way?
In the giant bulbous kind of way.
Oh, really? Is the head inflated with hot air?
Absolutely. Oh, my God. That is awesome. Look at that.
I'll
now we'll get a picture.
Later.
Hello.
Oh, my goodness. If I had a dollar for every time a guest said that to me.
You never hear the end of it.
I'd have a dollar.
You would have a
sadly.
Yeah. If you had a dollar every time somebody said that,
oh, my gosh. Give me
dollar.
The camera.
Hey.
Picture all three of us. Yes.
Okay, I'll take a picture. Oh, yeah,
oh, yes. Can you do? Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Smash everything.
People are getting so excited by balloons.
Can you
totally. This, can we just take that?
You just hit the little camera. Thing? Yeah. No, the camera icon in the middle.
Yeah.
Here we are. Posing.
Fantastic.
Okay, let's get Mr. Haglund in.
I'm here.
Okay, I have to go back a little bit. Hang on.
Smile.
Magnificent. Here we go.
Yay.
Could you do one with mine, please, John?
There you are.
Yes.
Is that okay?
That's great.
And are we ready? Here we go. It looks like I've been thrown in this puppet.
That's hilarious.
Don't call me it. John, I love that we're still recording. All right, we should do some sort of wrap-up here.
Oh, yes.
Thank you
very much, John and Natalie, for being on the show.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Absolute joy. We'll, of course, edit out the screw-ups.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be in, of course, the UK again at the beginning of May.
Oh, right.
And... And depending on what developments take place in the careers of John K. Steele and Miss Balooniverse, maybe I'll be able to do a small interview and we'll be able to update our listeners.
Update our listeners.
On what's going on.
On the Miss Balooniverse. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Yay.
What a way to end it.
You know, Dean Haglund, people can find many episodes.
Many of them.
Of Chill Pack Hollywood Hour at the official website, chillpackhollywood.com, C-H-I-L-L-P-A-K Hollywood.com. They can download them.
Yep.
Stream them.
Stream right there.
Subscribe via iTunes.
We insist.
And really simple syndication.
And if you're in iTunes, send us a little review.
Write a review. Of course, you can always write us.
Yes.
chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. We read every email, and you often try to answer them on the show.
Which is also fun.
Become a liker of the show on Facebook.
Like us.
Facebook.com/chillpackhollywood.
Follow us on Twitter.
You are at D. Haglund.
You are full name, Phil Lernes.
Absolutely. And we will be back next week.
This show was pre-recorded.
Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? We could float among the stars together, you and I.
Oh, we can fly.
It's your chill back Hollywood hour. Chill back Hollywood hour. In a historic building in downtown Los Angeles. In a historic building in downtown Los Angeles.
Belated spoiler alert.